everyone. It is the Rebecca Duro Show. Thank you for tuning in. We got a really another great show tonight. I'm really excited about this. Donna Rose, who, as many of you may know, is HRC's first trans board member, first board of directors member ever. She left the organization in 2007 over some issues with the way things were being done there. Needless to say, she's got a perspective that I think we should hear, because this is a woman who was there at the beginning. Well, not at the beginning of HRC, but, you know, at the beginning of the trans community's problems. She was an insider there. And so I think her perspective is really going to be valuable. I'm very excited. We're going to have her on. She's going to be calling in just a few minutes. So stick around for that. That's going to be great. Now, in the meantime, while we're waiting for Donna, I'll talk a little bit about my own thoughts. Personally, I've gotten a lot of feedback. I've seen a lot of feedback about Chad Griffin's speech and his appearance on this show last Friday. And it's interesting. It really is. To be honest, I didn't get quite the reaction I expected. I expected people to be a lot more hardline. But I'll tell you, I was kind of impressed, because folks who are arguably hardliners here, folks who have been anti-HRC for as long as I can remember, and certainly as long as I was, and, you know, I mean, I don't really, I'm more like, I don't know if I'm anti-HRC anymore. I'm more like, I don't know what the word to describe it is, ambivalent, but that's not quite right. It's more like hopeful. You know what I mean? I'm not opposed to this organization. I'm more like, well, you guys need to show me something here. And that's kind of, by the way, if you heard that tweeting in the background, I apologize for that. That is my new cell phone, which I just got yesterday, as a matter of fact. I'm going to see if I can turn this thing down so that we don't have to hear it. Let's see. Oh, there we go. Oh, no, that didn't work. Oh, okay. So let's see. Here, let's try that again. Bink, 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 bink. Okay. Good. Shut up now. You're on vibrate. Very good. Okay. So anyway, I have to tell you, I was really impressed with Griffin. Now, you got to remember, and this point has been made by other folks, most notably Donna, who had a great, great op-ed at advocate.com today, which, if you haven't read this yet, I encourage you to go read it. It's really good stuff. But, you know, let's remember. And I pointed this out during my interview with Chad last week. A lot of the stuff that we are most upset about HRC, that that's really the reasons why we have the issues with this organization that we do. Most of that stuff, in fact, everything except for the last issue, the flag incident, except for that, everything else happened not on his watch. I think it's important to remember that, okay? That they brought in this guy, and, well, all right. You know, a year and a few months ago, he was just getting his feet wet. This happened. And I think, again, as I've said, I think this kind of galvanized the organization and forced them to take a look in the mirror and say, hey, you know, we're not doing anything to change hearts and minds here. People still feel about us the way they always have. And we have to do something about that, because what's happening is the community, and I don't mean just the trans community, I mean the LGBT community as a movement, is passing us by. And I mean HRC, and I think they said, you know, we got to step up. It's time. Otherwise, we're the wrong ones. We're the ones who are out of step with where the community is today. And I think, and I give credit. I give credit to HRC for recognizing that and taking steps to do something about it. And isn't that exactly what we were calling on them to do all those years ago? Recognize that you have a problem here and take steps to correct it. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so hopeful here, because this is, when you get right down to it, I mean, put the individual policy issues off to the side for a minute, okay? Because right now, let's be honest, we all know what the situation is in Congress. ENDA is not getting through the House. It just isn't. And we know this. So put that stuff off to the side for a minute. Okay? But the reality is that what we were arguing for was for HRC to say, you know what? We are a part of this community. We are as good as you, and we demand to be treated with respect. And if you want to say you're an LGBT organization, you have to earn that right. You don't just get that right. It's not just handed to you. You don't get the right to say we're LGBT inclusive unless you're actually LGBT inclusive. And let's be honest, up until that point, they really were not. They were accused of tokenism. They were accused of it when Donna was there. They were accused of it with Megan Stabler. They were accused of it with Jay Brown. They were accused, you know, and not entirely unfairly. But now I don't think that label applies because, number one, they have taken steps and are taking steps to hire more good trans people. Number one. Number two, the key the key word in what I just said is good. They're not just hiring any old trans people. They're hiring the good ones. They're hiring the people like Hayden Morrow, who's got all this union experience, who knows his shit, and they're putting them into management. Okay, that more than anything else impresses me. I mean, they got Allison Van Kuyken. She's damn good. She's running a whole operation out in Ohio for them right now. It's awesome. I mean, that's the thing. It's not just about putting trans people on staff. It's making us part of the movement. It's about making us part of what you do in an integral way. And it's not just about saying, well, yes, we support this, or no, we don't support that, or blah, blah, blah. That's only one piece of it. It's also about saying, we are you and you are us. And showing that, proving that, demonstrating that. And that's not such an easy thing to do. And the reason for that is because this is not easy. You have to hire people. You have to seek them out. You have to have the positions. You have to be able to say, we're going to invest time. We're going to invest money. We are going to be willing to give up some of that monolithic power that we've always had and share it. And use it and implement it in concert with all groups. In other words, representative people who represent the entire community, not just gays, not just lesbians, not just even bi folks, but everybody. And that's what it is. It's not just being inclusive and saying, yes, we support these people should have rights, and no, they don't. It's showing that we are you and you are us. And to me, from my perspective, having been around as long as I have, that to me is a key point here. Inclusion. Because I think that is part of the problem I think that we saw, and I think Donna's story says a lot about this, the inclusion issue. Yes, she was there. But was she truly included? Well, I'm going to ask Donna about her story. I'm going to ask her to talk about that a little bit. So I'm not going to go into that too much, but suffice it to say that I think inclusion was and is a big issue. in terms of folks who feel that, well, you know, we could have had careers as activists and things like that. I've heard said by some people, and we never had those opportunities because HRC would never consider hiring people like us. So we lost an entire generation of activists, of trans activists, who never had the opportunity to move into those things because organizations like the Human Rights Campaign and, frankly, like NGLTF also, because I didn't see them doing a hell of a job on this either, really didn't step up and basically just kept hiring people like themselves, more wealthy, white, lesbian, and gay people. And that's all you saw from these organizations for year after year after year after year after year. And so I think this is a key point, is it you can't say we are you, we're fighting for you, when you won't even put us on your staff. It's what, it, you know, in a lot of ways, it's the same argument I once made about the media, where we have these folks who sometimes they go, and particularly on a certain blog, which shall remain HuffPo, which I mean nameless, excuse me, that, you know, they hire these gay white men, and then they wonder why they make these idiotic mistakes, calling bigoted videos hilarious and stuff like that. People who have no social consciousness in regards to trans people, and they put them in positions of power. And you see what happens when you have that level of ignorance, unfortunately, in a major media platform. Unfortunately, I don't think HuffPo has done anything about that. We haven't seen similar mistakes recently. But as far as I'm concerned, the problem still hasn't been solved, because I don't know of any trans people who are employed by the Huffington Post. Do you? No. It's the same old deal. You know, The Advocate, obviously, took a major step, hired some trans writers. There are other places. I've gotten some work. The South Florida Gay News, where I write a column for now. There's other places where other trans writers are writing. But, you know, I mean, I still think, you know, the world's largest LGBT blog, which would be Huffington Post Gay Voices, still apparently doesn't feel it's necessary to hire any actual trans folks. And we do have a call, and I have a feeling I know who that is. I believe that may be our friend Donna Rose. So hang on a second. Hello, yes, you're on Becky. The air.
How are you doing, Becky?
Hi, is this Donna?
This is Donna.
All right, Donna, it's so great to have you on. Thank you so much for doing this.
No problem. Thanks for asking.
You bet. Okay, you know, I wanted to ask you, because when this whole event with Chad Griffin's speech and HRC's renewed effort to bring in the trans community, you were one of the first people I thought of, because years ago, when we were still protesting and standing outside the headquarters, you were my first contact there, and through you, I met other people, and you kind of, it seems like you were kind of a liaison, I think, in a lot of ways, between folks like me, who were the anti-HRC trans crowd, and the organization itself. And so I would like, if you can, to talk a little bit about that time. What drew you to HRC, and what kept you there as long as you were there?
Well, you know, I used to think that life would be simple after I transitioned. When I was living in Phoenix and transitioning, I became friends with a couple of people who I'm still friends with today. One was Monica Helm. And another one was Amanda Schrader, and both of them were very active in trans advocacy work. I really had no interest in pursuing that as anything that would be important to me. But, you know, it's funny how life plays itself out. Sometimes things you plan on don't seem to happen, and things you don't seem to make themselves big. when I wrote my book in 2003, I became aware of the history between the Trump community and the human rights campaign. At that point, I was a very naive person with the best of intentions of trying to repair some damage that I had felt was caused simply by misunderstanding or miscommunication. So I sent a copy of my book to the president of HRC in hopes that they could read it and let it get better. It was sidetracked by somebody who read it and contacted me and asked me to come to the building to do a lunch tour, which then opened the door to meet Beryl Hirschhaft, who was head of the workplace project. And there were conversations about their need to get trans representation as part of the business council, because at that point, trans elements of the corporate equality index were just kind of beginning to come into their own, and they needed some guidance. So within short order, myself, Jameson Green went and got involved with the business council. And then through that, other things seemed to happen. They got to know me, I got to know them, a level of respect kind of came up. And then that one day at the building, when there were the protests outside, a group of us had been invited to come and speak in support of a board resolution to only support trans instances legislation. Next thing you know, recognition that they don't have anybody on board of director, and that kind of one thing led to another. So, you know, it was not something that I had planned, but I always felt, and I think what I've done over the years is representative of that, is that I will always be part of our community. I will always be trans. I will always have brothers and sisters who are trans. I am more than just that, but at the same time, I am not naive about my thoughts. And so being put into a position where you are the only one of your kind, or people don't understand you, so you're a little bit of an unknown to them, and they're a little reluctant around you, breaking some of those barriers was something that came with the territory. But at the same time, I did feel a very real need to begin the conversation between those of us in the community who had needs and who were angry, who needed access to a variety of things, and people that up till that point we really had no way to talk with, whether it's from the workplace project, whether it's the political side of the house, whether it really didn't matter, remember? And so even when all this stuff came down in over ENDA, we got Barney Frank's chief of staff before Diego got on board
Diego Sanchez.
Well, this was before Diego. This was
okay.
This was
hey, Donna, you're breaking up just a little bit. Is there a way you can like maybe move if you got a cell and like maybe get a better, slightly better signal? Because you're.
Can. I will do that for you in just a moment.
Okay. Yeah, because you're okay, but you're kind of a little. It would be if you can get a stronger signal, it would be easier to hear you.
Absolutely.
That's incredible. Now, what are the things I also wanted to ask you while you're resituating? I know that obviously in 2007, during the what we call the Salmanese era, or some people call it different things, but we'll call it the Joe Salmanese era, you decided that it was time to resign from HRC's board. And I'd like you, if you can, to talk about your thinking on that. Was that a hard choice for you to make?
It actually was. Well, it wasn't a hard choice because I knew what to do. It was harder to do it than to make it, which is not, you know, the same thing. So, when we had the board meeting at which we made the unfortunate decision that we did, and it was not nearly as unanimous as someone might think. It was a very somber thing, and it was a very close vote to make the decision to do what ended up happening. But once it happened, any possibility of me staying there in that capacity was moot. I could not speak in favor of the organization because I did not believe what they were doing was right. I could not raise money for the organization. I couldn't do any of the things that board members are expected to do. And so I resigned from the board, but Jameson and I did not resign from the business council. What ended up happening there is that the two of us wanted to talk to Joe about it before we did that, because it wasn't the same responsibility for us there. And through those channels, we tried to talk to Joe, and he ignored us for 2 weeks, would not respond to our inquiries or our requests to meet with him and discuss what was happening and how we were going to deal with it. So we ended up resigning from that as well. But at the time, I was very much of two minds, because the thing that people don't understand is being able to sit at the table and hear what's going on and be able to provide input as a trans person, you know, at that stage of the game would have been a helpful thing, I think, in retrospect. But that person couldn't be me. I could not, in good conscience, sit there and do those things after that happened.
I totally understand that. And just out of curiosity, I don't know, I mean, if this involves, you know, betraying confidences, obviously you can perfectly decline to answer, and I won't think any less of you, but can you tell us, in your opinion, how much of what went on in 2007 was about the board, and how much was about decisions that Joe Solmanis, was either making or encouraging others to make? Where do you think the real blame lies there?
The blame lies with Joe.
Really? Okay.
It's that simple. When we met at that board meeting, Joe was president of the organization, and it was his job to make a recommendation. That's the way that nonprofit and the relationship between the director or the president and the board work is that the board approves recommendations that the staff makes to them or doesn't, and that empowers the staff to do what it does. And that's true with which, for HRC, for example, which politicians are going to support financially or otherwise, you know, what legislation we're going to speak out actively for. I mean, there are a number of things that at the board meeting come up for a vote. And, you know, typically speaking, the board respects the work that the staff has done to go into making the recommendation and usually approves. So on this particular occasion, we as a group were waiting to hear what Joe was going to recommend, because we didn't know. It was a week after the fact, if you remember. We were kind of waiting to hear. We'd scheduled a couple of board meetings that got canceled, so it was a little bit after the fact. And when we went to that meeting, Joe made the recommendation that he did. I was allowed to speak first after he made it, and I spoke out against it and made the recommendation that we actively oppose what was happening at the time. So we had two distinct paths of action being discussed amongst ourselves. And frankly, I think that I was, most of the board, and this is one of the sad things, most of the board at that point, they were good friends. They were a very driven, they were a great group of people, by and large. I've got nothing bad to say about any of them, even those who voted the way that they did that may not have been our way. But I strongly believe that I was the more persuasive of the voices that evening, until Joe brought up the fact that for those, if we actively opposed ENDA, that those of our friends, those political friends that we had who voted for it, would get a demerit in our political scorecard, which didn't make sense to a lot of people. How can we penalize our friends in Congress for voting for a quote-unquote gay bill because it wasn't all of what we needed? And so once we started down that path, a number of people just couldn't see a way to make that, to connect the dots there. So when it came to a vote, it was very close,
Okay.
What ended up happening? So
right, exactly. One of the things I want to ask you also about, you published an op-ed at advocate.com today, which I thought was absolutely terrific, and it seemed like you are like me, cautious but hopeful, based on Chad Griffin's speech and your own experience with this organization today. Is that a fair description of where you are on HRC right now?
That would be accurate. I am cautiously optimistic, but I wouldn't have been this way a year ago. Shortly after Chad had come into office, but as I try to explain a little bit in the piece today, he has already done quite a bit that I find well worth acknowledging as very positive steps in the right direction, not just for trans people, but for the organization as a whole. And so when he said what he said, one of the ironies is I look back over the weekend at an article that was in Trans Advocate, and shortly after what happened in 2007. So it was in early December, and a memo had been leaked that was printed in whole on Trans Advocate, all about something called Project Winback. I don't know if you remember it.
Oh yes, I remember that very well.
Yes, and looking through what it said, and looking through where we are, and some of what has come to pass. Organically, because I don't think Dad has seen it. I think it got buried, soon after it saw light of day. But little by little, the organization has been doing some good things, and so I think a lot of us have been waiting for an apology, and more than that, a pledge to do better. And, the conversations that have been happening since then have been along the lines of, words are one thing, but these are the other. We've been lied to in the past. And, it's been all of that absolutely true and accurate. But a lot of what you accept about something has to do with the frame of mind with which you approach it. So I am cautiously optimistic about the organization. I am cautiously optimistic about the relationship moving forward. Does that mean that all is going to be beautiful and everybody's going to sing Kumbaya at some point at some national dinner someplace? Absolutely not. If we are moving away from the acrimony that we've had towards some level of cooperation and integration and away from separation, I think we're light years ahead of where we've been.
Absolutely. And as far as I can see, and granted, I'm not an insider there at all, but from my layman's perspective, I completely agree with you, at least based on the evidence I've seen. But another thing I wanted to ask you, and I had to ask you, I kind of alluded to this in my interview with Chad, but I want to ask you, because you actually sat on this board. You were a member of the HRC Board of Directors, and a lot of those folks, as we know, are still there. The same folks who at that point were voting, a lot of those folks are still there. So I would like to know what your assessment is, frankly, of their trustworthiness. Do you think that we can trust them to keep these promises that they just made to us through Chad?
Well, I'll answer that in a roundabout way, in that when what happened in 2007, in my opinion, needed to happen, that we as a collective community learned a lot about ourselves and about how our commitment to those of us who are the most needy or who are kind of outside the bell curve of income or affluence or, there are a number of things that typically go into criticism of HRC. And unfortunately, we got left out, but in our work, there are not a lot of us there, the first thing. So I really strongly feel that what happened, I talked to Joe afterwards, in the years afterwards, and I told him that history would judge that he didn't get to judge at that point, and neither did I. History would kind of look back and say, well, this was kind of a formative event that ultimately led to positive things. It just happened to hurt a lot at the time. So, but as I said earlier, the board at that point was not, it was not nearly a slam dunk by any stretch of the imagination. And I very strongly believe that the board spent years trying to put out fires of relationships that they had been trying to build, in their own communities and other difficult aftermath stuff that kind of came with the territory. But the thing that we've learned is that, here we are. Nobody wants that again. Nobody wants that internal split. Nobody wants to have to fight that fight again. And the question isn't whether or not they would vote the same or not, because frankly, I don't think that they would. I think at this stage of the game, we know what the deal is. My biggest beef with what happened, my second biggest beef with what happened in 2007 was Joe's refusal to use political clout that the organization had to fight back against what was being proposed, and to kind of go with as a stooge for nothing, for for lack of a better term, of Bernie Frank in this ill-conceived split that was happening. And so, you know, I strongly believe that now our political representatives are much more aware, and they do not want this fight any more than we do. So the world is not the same as it was in 2007. I think we're all wiser for it, and I do believe that if it came to that, which I don't think it will, we would be on the upside of the decision.
Interesting. Okay. Another thing I want to ask you, because you've had so much involvement with HRCA and its programs and all that stuff, where do you think the greatest need in the trans community is where HRC can have the most impact? Where do you think they should be focusing?
Jobs.
Yeah.
Jobs in schools. I really, you know, when we were doing work at the beginning for the Corporate Equality Index to help corporations put policies in place that would support trans employees, we were acutely aware of the fact that a supportive policy is not worth a pile of beans if you don't have any trans employees and none can get hired because we can't get past the, you know, the first interview. And so we tried to do a number of things over the years. That year in 2007, we had a career, we called it a career expo. We didn't want to call it a job fair. We were very careful about the words that we chose. But we wanted to invite a number of the supportive companies that you know, were involved with OutNequal and involved with other of workplace things that we have been doing, and connect them with the trans job seekers. And so here we are, you know, almost a decade later, and the problem still remains that losing a job, being unemployed, being underemployed, is more than just legislation. If then it gets passed tomorrow, it's not going to make it easier for trans people to get jobs. And so putting together a program of working with the CERM or human resource managers and now having conversations not about trans employees on the job, but how do we hire qualified trans employees into positions for which they can grow and benefit the organization without having to worry about, you know, the discrimination that many of us prefer granted as being put in parcel with workplace transitions. So jobs to me is huge. It affects, that's why ENDO is such a big deal. It affects our self-esteem. It affects our self-worth. It affects our ability to pay our bills. I mean, you can go down the list. I don't have to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my last question for you is, your the op-ed you wrote, the title was Some Advice for Chad Griffin. What do you think is the number one piece of advice that you would like to see them adhere to as they pursue this effort?
Well, first, I didn't choose the title. They chose the title.
I know. They do that.
Yeah, you know how that works. But,
yes, I do, as a matter of fact.
But I suppose it's but if I talk to Chad and he asks me, what can we do? I will tell him, set up the goal is to engage our community. When I was on the business council, when Jameson and I were on the business council, anything significant that we did, we got a group of us together to make decisions so that it wasn't just the two of us. It's important to recognize that engagement is a key part to making good decisions and having good direction on difficult topics. And so what I would strongly urge is to put together an opportunity to do some trans town halls, face-to-face town halls, in a variety of places to start collecting information, to start putting together a program of by which trans people can communicate, you know, what's important to them, feel not symbolically but actually as though they that we are providing input that can be actioned upon, and turns chats promises to do more and to do better, not into something that we're waiting for him to do for us, but something that we are actively involved in making the list of what needs to be done and prioritizing them. And then the organization can fund it, can turn these things into action. Because that way, you know, we're not sitting on the sidelines looking, well, no, that's not enough. Or, no, sorry, that's not the right thing. You know, keep trying. We'll let you know. This way we're actively helping ourselves. We're helping our community. We're helping our brothers and sisters. And we are partnering in a way that we haven't done before. And so putting together a programmatic approach to the trans experience, I think, would go a long way towards building something that had some structure to it, that had some teeth to it, that had some direction to it, and could lend itself across all of the various foundation projects that the organization does.
Wow, excellent. Hey, Donna, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us. This has been terrific because I thought your perspective on this is so important because you're such a key figure in this whole story. And I hope you'll come on again because as this progresses, I'm sure we're going to want to pick your brain again on this.
Well, all you got to do is ask, Vicky. You know, we've known each other for a long time. And
there are a lot of us
in the community who may not have always seen eye to eye on strategy, but at the end of the day, you know, we stand together and we're all wanting the same things. And so anything I can do to help, you know how to reach me, and all you got to do is ask.
Oh, you bet. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Take care. Good night.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, and that was Donna Rose, the awesome Donna Rose. I'm so impressed with her. I really like her. She's a terrific person. As Donna said, we've known each other for years and years, and I just, you know, that was one of the reasons why I you know, as much as I had an anti-HRC attitude and a whole thing and all that stuff, I was never, you know, I always held out at least a shred of hope because it's like, if you can put somebody that good on your board, maybe all hope is not lost. You know what I mean? Because she was that good and she's that committed. And it's really disappointing because when they lost her, they really lost a major gem, I think, just in my opinion, that they really lost a major asset there in her because she was so committed and so enthusiastic, and they really, it seems like they just beat it out of her, and that to me is the saddest part of all, that somebody who has that kind of commitment, that kind of enthusiasm, that kind of skill at doing the work, was essentially driven out. And according to Donna, who, as I say, I find extremely credible, she seems to place the lion's share of the blame for that on Joe Salmanese. Now, let's not forget, okay, we can't absolve the board of everything here, and nor will I intend to, because you know what? They still had to take a vote. And the fact that they voted the way Salmanese told them to, tells you something. Okay, so I do not absolve the board in any way. But it seems interesting that you know, I had not realized that Salmanese had played quite that role. I mean, obviously we knew he was involved, but, you know, this is a perspective that we don't really hear very often because, I mean, how many people have Donna Rose's perspective on this? Now, if you got some thoughts on what Donna was talking about, 646-564-9501. 646-564-9501. Give us a call. Tell us what you're thinking. Personally, I have to tell you, I'm pretty enthused about the whole thing. I'm not confident of anything. You know, I mean, that's a place I'm not ready to go. I'm just not. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm impressed. I'm encouraged. I like what I see. I like who I see. I like what they're doing. I haven't had a reason to have a serious complaint about the Human Rights Campaign since that flag thing. Really. I just haven't. And that's one of the reasons why I keep saying that I think that that incident was the benchmark that kind of like just whacked them across the back of the head and said, hey. You know what I mean? I really believe that because it seemed like that was the moment when everything started to change slowly. It seems to me because I didn't have a single reason to complain about these folks after that event. And so, and you know what? I'll tell you the truth. I find Chad pretty credible. My main concern was, to be honest with you, is not Chad. It's not Chad Griffin. I think he believes every single word he says, and I have no doubt of that. I think he is sincere. I think he was enthusiastic. I think he believes every word he is saying. And you know what? I don't believe he would have been standing there at that podium in Southern Comfort unless he had the support of that board. Because he knows better, and they know better. Seriously. Seriously. And so I am encouraged. I am encouraged. Again, I think I need to see stuff. I need to see stuff happening. I need to see more than just positive sounding words, no matter how what they promise, no matter how enthusiastically they're delivered, no matter how sincerely they're believed. I need to see more. I am impressed. I am hopeful. I just, like a lot of people, I just can't go in with both, you know, jump in with both feet and say, okay, I'm a believer now. I'm not there yet. I mean, I'm willing to get there. I am willing to be convinced, absolutely, positively. But I have not been convinced yet. And that's just the reality. I need to see more. I cannot just go and, you know, say, well, you know, I like Chad, I like Donna Rose. Well, she's not really with the organization, but I like what I'm hearing. I mean, you know, Hayden and Allison Van Kuyken and all those folks. And I do. I'm extremely impressed with all of them. I mean, that's not the issue. But again, there's this history that you, no matter what you hear from HRC, that history is still there. And it still colors my perceptions. And I suspect it will for a while. But at the same time, I also feel like, yeah, this is, you know, it used to be. Where we just assumed that, you know, whatever the situation was, well, what's the way that HRC could fuck us over? Oh, well, then that's what will happen, most likely. You know, oh, well, there's a question as to whether or not HRC is going to support an inclusive ENDA. Well, I'm betting that they won't. And guess what? You know what I mean? It's like they kept fulfilling their own negative prophecies. And that's the problem. When you fulfill everybody's worst expectations of you over and over and over and over, well, then that's what people just, I mean, they just assume that's what it's going to be. They don't bother. It's almost like people just don't even bother to pay attention to what you're doing anymore. Well, because why should they, right? Because, you know, it just, and that's how HRC can't be trusted becomes a truism, where people just say, you know, this organization is untrustworthy. Why? Because everybody says so. Well, why does everybody say so? Well, because they've proven themselves untrustworthy all these times. Now, I think what they've done, at least successfully, at least this much, is they've got people to say, really? They've got people to stop. They've gotten the people to pause for a moment and go, seriously? All right, well, can you prove this? How do we know? You know, can you back up what you're saying here? I think that's what Chad Griffin successfully did, was he got trans people to stop, pause a moment, and say, all right, well, let's take another look here. Let's see what they're doing now. Let's see. And that's kind of where I am. You know, I mean, I'm a journalist. I'm always like, oh, I want to see what happens next. You know, I want to, I mean, I've written 3 articles about this topic in the last week. Well, one of them wasn't really, I wrote 2 paragraphs and the rest was Chad's speech, so I don't know if that counts as writing. But, you know, I've had 3 articles published on this topic in the last week, plus 2 radio shows. You know, and it makes people like me say, wow, I'm impressed with what I'm hearing. Now I want to be impressed with what I'm seeing. And I am, to a large extent, because I'm seeing people like Allison Van Kuyken. I'm seeing people like Jay Brown. I'm seeing people like Hayden Mora. I'm seeing people like Allison Gill. Folks like that. That's what impresses me. Because that is the physical manifestation of promises that have been made here. That they're not just saying we're going to be more inclusive. They're actually taking steps to make it fact. That impresses me. Not only because they're hiring, not just because they're not just hiring people because they're trans. They're hiring people who are trans, who are good and who are qualified and who can move into a management type situation and who can be, you know, can take leadership roles here. And that to me is the most exciting part of this, because let's be honest. We all know this. Those of you who have been activists for 5 minutes or for 10 years, it doesn't matter. No organization is any better or worse than the people who make it up. These kind of organizations are all about the people. The enthusiasm, the dedication, the willingness to participate, all that stuff. That's what these organizations are. They are their people. And so when the message you get from those people is, you know, we're really not interested, and or, well, yeah, we'd like to help, but we're going to help ourselves first, you know, like New York and New Hampshire, those kind of places. I mean, seriously, when that's what you get, when you get excuses, when you get explanations, when you get hair splitting, when you get this kind of game playing that HRC used to do all the time. Well, why would you trust that? Because that's the thing. It may be individuals like Joe Salmanis who are actually doing the things that cost them this reputation. But when you're the president of that organization, yeah, that's going to reflect on your brand. Because that's how it works. because you're not the president of JoeSalmanis.com. You're the president of the Human Rights Campaign. And so when you fuck up, when you screw over the trans folks, guess what? We don't necessarily, I mean, yeah, sure, we blame Salmanis, but we also blame the organization that employs him and allowed it to happen. And as Donna just told us, fairly, I think. And so that's one of the reasons why I think, and this is, I'll be honest with you, this is the first time I've heard Donna say that she feels that Salmanis was responsible for the bulk of this. This is something new in my experience. And so that's another reason why I have, I'm encouraged. Because I don't see that kind of mealy-mouth crap coming from Chad Griffin. I mean, I've never met the guy. I mean, aside from our conversation Friday night. But he seems like a good guy. He seems genuine. He seems sincere. Okay, yeah, sure, I don't know. I mean, there's no way for me to know this, but he certainly seems sincere. You know, I mean, just to give you an idea, Salmanis hated me. Hated me! I mean, okay, just to I'll give you an example of this. When I, back in 2011, in February, HRC had one of their galas at the Waldorf in New York City. And I went there as press for the Balearica project. Well, I wanted to get a few minutes with Salmanis. So I found their VP of their Vice President of Communications, Fred Sains. And I said to him, hey, Fred, can I get a couple questions with Joe? So I figured I was going to ask him about Enda or something. Would not come within 10 feet of me. Well, you know, I mean, he was around the area where I was in because I was in the press pit. He never came within arm's reach. Never. And it's funny because I saw at one point, I saw Fred walk over to him and say something into his ear. Now, of course, there was music playing and people talking. I couldn't hear what he was saying, but I did get to see the expression on his face. And it was pretty clear that he was talking about me. And the expression on his face just read, like, you know, I would rather be drawn and quartered than talk to that woman. I mean, seriously. Okay. But this was Salmanis. This was the kind of guy he was. He didn't care about trans people. He's a rich, white, gay guy. And he cared about, well, rich, white, gay guys. He really didn't seem to express much interest or concern for issues that did not involve gay marriage. I mean, he gave lip service. But, I mean, I don't think anybody particularly found him very credible. Except for rich white gay men. Which, of course, make up the bulk of HRC's executive board. And did at the time. Now, personally, I think that They were smart to get rid of him, frankly. I don't know. Now, of course, he may have left. He may have been fired. I have no idea, is it really important. But I think it's good that he's gone, because I don't believe for a microsecond, that if Salmanis was still in that job, anybody would take him seriously as an advocate for trans rights. I really don't. I just don't think anybody would take him seriously, because I think he's proven himself a guy who's willing to throw the little guy under the bus and encourage others to do the same. And so it's not surprising. It's not surprising that they got rid of him. And like I said, I like Chad. Now, Chad, as he told us last week on the show, he is the president of the board. He has a lot of influence there. And I think, as Donna was telling us, Joe used his influence to prevent trans inclusion. Whereas I would be much more apt and willing to believe that a guy like Chad Griffin is going to use his influence to guarantee trans inclusion. Now, do I know that? Again, don't know. I don't know anything. I could never guarantee such a thing at all, ever. But I think it's far more likely. Anyway, I think we are going to take a quick break because your host does need to visit the little girl's room. So what I'm going to do is, unfortunately, I still don't have any music. I am working. I'm going to contact Mr. Mike to dig into his archives and get me something to play during these breaks. So in the meantime, this is an interview that I did with Noah Michelson a while back about... it's about editorial policy at the Huffington Post, which I referred to a little earlier. It's about seven minutes 40 something seconds. So I don't know if we're going to play the whole thing, but probably about at least 5 minutes of it. And we will see you in a few minutes. So stick around, okay? All right, hi everybody. We are back. It is the Rebecca Giro Show, and we are talking to the Huffington Post Gay Voices editor-in-chief, Noah Michelson. And we wanted to talk about, there was a video that many people consider transphobic. It depicted anti-transgender violence, a trans woman with a mustache who was obviously supposed to be Parker Malloy, who is, of course, the trans issues correspondent for The Advocate. And Noah, you are the guy who's in charge of the editorial staff that thought that this was appropriate to post on the Huffington Post Gay Voices. And what I'm wondering is, well, I'll just say it like this. What were you guys thinking?
Sure. First, I want to say thank you for having me, Becky. I've wanted to do your show for a while, so this is great. Secondly, over the last month, as you probably know, there's been a lot of discussion around RuPaul's Drag Race, specifically the use of certain terms on that show, and a lot of people have had a lot to say about that language, and it's sort of bled into a larger conversation between trans people, trans activists, drag queens, cisgender people, and there are a lot of different opinions about who gets to use what language and how that works. At Gay Voices, we, I would argue, have more trans content than any other website, LGBT or mainstream. It's a huge part of what we do. It's very important to us. But we're also very interested in having a lot of different voices talking about issues like language and power, identity, privilege. When I saw the video, I did not think that video, I didn't see it in that light. And that was actually misjudgment on my behalf, especially in this current climate. I saw it as a parody and a discussion about language policing, and that's how we approached it. I did not view that person in the video as Parker Malloy. But in retrospect now, I can see, number one, how much that video has hurt a lot of people. And number two, how sort of not helpful that video is to the discussion. So originally it was my intention that would be another viewpoint in the larger discussion that we've been having on the page with lots of people weighing in, including yourself and the great blog that you published a couple of days ago. And I thought it was another voice. And I really realized after I talked to some people that I really respect in the trans community, out of the trans community, and they said, you know, this video isn't helpful, and it really goes too far. And I agree. So we took it down.
Okay. And now let me ask you something.
Sure.
I'll throw this in. I realize I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this question, but I am curious. There have been charges that, and these have not come from me personally, but there have been charges that say, the fact that the editorial staff of Gay Voices is all cisgender white guys, you know, people are saying, well, you know, this was bound to happen. Maybe they should get some diversity in there. Do you think that was a factor? That maybe if somebody who was a trans person was on the editorial staff, that maybe you wouldn't have been so fast to post it?
I don't know. I can't speak to that because that's just a hypothetical. I would like to say that our staff does not include just all white gay men. And that's part of the problem, I think, with this entire discussion is that there's a lot of the accusations made about what's going on, and it doesn't look at the reality of what we do on the website or who writes for the website. We have people of color who are on staff. We have queer women who are on staff. And so to just say it's just white cisgender men isn't the reality. Secondly, above and beyond that, We have an incredible group of bloggers who are just as important to the lifeblood of what we do. And a lot of those voices are trans voices. So I understand what you're saying. I understand the accusation that's being made about that, but I don't think it's fair.
Okay, fair enough. Now, let me ask you a question. Going forward,
yeah.
If another video
yeah.
similar to this is found, are you going to handle this differently going forward, do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't run it. You know,
okay.
It's
well,
simple
that,
as that.
That's the key point. Yeah.
And I want to say, you know, I do apologize that it ran. I do apologize that it hurt people. And I don't think that this is indicative of what our mission is at Gay Voices. And I think that our record really speaks for itself. I think that this was an isolated incident. And I also don't think that the reason we put it up was because we thought, oh, this is a video that is calling for the murder of trans women. I think you would have to think that I was some kind of monster if you thought that's how I was reading that video when I watched it and then said, let's get that up on the site.
Okay.
So,
let me ask you a question,
yeah,
though.
Go ahead.
But the fact that you didn't perceive it that way, and so many
mm-hmm.
trans people and allies do perceive it that way, does that imply
yeah.
that there needs to be, I don't know, a wider perspective of making these decisions, that somehow this slipped by the editorial staff, that and yet all these people created such a strong reaction, and yet not one person on the editorial staff anticipated that.
I also had other trans people who also read it the way that I did and who thought it was a commentary on language policing and who spoke to me about that when I was consulting people about the video. I ultimately felt that it wasn't helpful, like I said, and that opinion, that voice, wasn't one that was actually helping the conversation. So I don't think it was a matter of us just being blind to the needs of the transgender community. I really think it was about us trying to present as many different nuanced voices to this discussion as possible. And that's what we've been doing for the past month. And as I said, I think that this particular video goes too far and is offensive, and I understand that now. But when we put it up, that was not our intention, and that's not the way that we were reading it.
Okay. All right. Hey, everybody. We are back. And I wanted to throw that on there because I don't have any music to put on for a break, but also because it's kind of reminiscent in a way of kind of the way that like we've had to deal with HRC was, you know, in a lot of cases, and I don't think this is as true as I once believed, but in a lot of cases, I think the HRC and whether it was the leadership or whether it was the rank and file or whether it was the board or whoever, that a lot of these folks really, up until recently, just didn't get it. I mean, look at for example, and this is an example of what I mean. This whole thing with the flag incident with Karen Quimby, the field director, who said, you know, marriage isn't a transgender issue. Well, you know, it's one thing that, you know, you can't, if it was some staffer or some volunteer who said that, that would be one thing. And you could say, all right, well, you know, not everybody is up to speed, not everybody is fully trained. When you deal with volunteers, you're dealing with different personalities, different competency levels and all that. But you know what? What I think was the big deal with that particular incident was that we were talking about somebody who was middle management in HRC, and that somebody who had risen that high in the organization and had no clue whatsoever could utter something as stunningly ignorant as marriage is not a transgender issue, and actively try to get somebody to remove that flag, to block the flag, the transgender flag. That, to me, said something much, much more important, which was either HRC is not bothering to train their management staff, the people they send out into the field to do the work, in front of national media, no less, or is it that they just don't care? that this is not an important issue to them. Because that, to me, is what that implied. Was that it was inconceivable to me that an organization that was serious about trans rights, that really cared about the transgender community, could send somebody out there like Karen Quimby, so ignorant of trans people and issues, and send them out to represent the human rights campaign publicly. That, more than any other single factor, scared the crap out of me because of what it implied about the folks who sent her out there. And so I think HRC realized that too. I mean, again, I've said this a million times on the air, and I believe it is true. Regardless of what we think about what they have done in the past and how they've behaved and the choices they've made and all these things, these are not, nor have they ever been, stupid people. These are very smart, engaged, active people. And in a way, that made it worse because it's like, don't try to argue to us that you didn't know better, because we know you did know better. And that, I think, was a big source of anger for folks like myself. I would imagine, and I'm not, would not never speak for these folks, but you know, I anticipate, I believe that it's probably a big reason why folks who were like hardliners, like Monica Roberts and Katrina Rose and other folks, who were, you know, like you guys know better than this. Of course you know better than this, but you're doing it anyway. And that's the thing. It was a fair point. And as Chad said during his speech, you're not wrong. We weren't wrong then, and we're not wrong now. But that's the thing. Is I think, again, I think we have to allow, and I've said this last week, and I talked about this a lot last week, but it is still just as true as it was then. Well, it's only 7 days later, but, well, excuse me, what am I saying? 6 days later, because last week was Friday. But in any case, it's just as true now as it was at any time in the past, that we, as a community, we're winning. That's what it is these folks have said, you know, we have to come to where the community is. The community has passed us by. We are the ones who are failing to keep up. It's not the community that doesn't get what we're doing. It's we who are lagging behind where the rest of the community is. And the fact that it was costing them in terms of coalition building. I mean, really, how do you build credibility? How do you build coalitions when nobody wants to work with you? Because nobody trusts you. Nobody likes you. Nobody thinks that you're going to fight for the values that they believe in, that their organizations are founded on, that their members believe in. I mean, you hear these stories all the time about, you know, folks, they question, you know, HRC. There was one I remember I saw in the paper. I wish I could cite the thing, but I remember reading it at the time. Back in 2007, when they had the Left Out protest, which was a huge pro-trans protest that took place in San Francisco at the same night HRC's gala was. And the protest actually drew more attendance than the event itself. And I remember one of the San Francisco gay papers or one of the local papers interviewed like somebody who was at the gala and had come out to check out and see what was going on. And, of course, everybody who was trans or a trans ally who was at this thing had something to say about the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And they asked this guy who was in the HRC gala what he thought. And he had no clue. He didn't even know he had no knowledge of the issue. He didn't even know it was an issue. He didn't even know what ENDA was. And that says something, too. It says not only don't we give a shit about you, we don't even bother to know what you give a shit about. We don't even care. Another example. when I was at that same HRC gala in 2011, and the spokesman for Andrew Cuomo, yeah, that lovely guy, Mr. I'm going to be silent while the trans rights bill goes down in flames for, what, the fifth, sixth time, something like that? Anyway, so he sent the spokesman. Of course, he couldn't be bothered to show, so he sent his spokesman, he sent his toady, and he spoke in front of this group. And every time they said something about marriage, they went nuts. Every time they said something that was gay relevant, they went nuts. When they talked about gender, nothing. Nobody in the room. It was as if he was talking about, you know, platypuses or something. I mean, there was no reaction, not an applause, not a cheer, nothing. Nobody gave a shit. It just wasn't important. All you heard was conversation. People were talking like nobody was speaking. They were just calling conversations from themselves, clinking glasses, you know, that kind of thing. Nobody noticed or cared when they started talking about trans people. There was only one person in the room who bothered to cheer when the guy mentioned gender. And that would be me. Seriously. I was the only one in the room who even acknowledged that he was talking about us. And believe me when I tell you, I looked around that room. I could not find a single person who was displaying any behavior whatsoever that may have indicated that they cared. So, you know, when you see that, when you witness these kind of things, well, you form an opinion. And so I think, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I think that a lot has happened. Okay, don't forget, at this point, this was 2011. Here we are in 2014. Look at what has happened in the meantime. Okay, HRC has been steadily losing relevance. Same-sex marriage is not the headline story it used to be. I mean, people are just like, oh, yeah, another state passed marriage. Another court ruled. Oh, great, yeah. Oh, great, how exciting. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's exciting for the people who are in those states, and of course it's a victory and blah, 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 blah. But it's not the huge news story that it once was. What's in the news? Laverne Cox is in the news. Janet Mock is in the news. You know, trans people are in the news. We are what's hot in the culture at the moment. I mean, I hate to say this, okay? I know I'm going to get pushback on this, but I'm going to say it anyway. At this point in 2014, gay is passé. Trans is where it's at now. That's where people are talking about. That's what people are paying attention to. And guess what? That's a good thing. It's good for us. And you know what? It's good for gay people, too. Because the less... Now that the hubbub, the, you know, kerfuffle about gay marriage has died down and it's basically just become like, yeah, we have gay marriage now. This is the world. That's good for gay people. That's very normalizing. People aren't raising eyebrows at a married gay couple anymore. It's just part of what American culture is in 2014. And that's a great thing. That's a wonderful thing. And now trans people are getting our moment in the sun, where people are paying attention to us and hearts and minds are starting to change. And so I would say to you, listening to me right now, yeah, you, I'm talking to you, okay? This is exactly, this is the moment when we need, when we most need an organization like the Human Rights Campaign to step up and say, you know what? We understand that we are in a moment here where we can begin the process of not only normalizing gay people, but normalizing the trans community as well. And we are going to use our resources, our manpower, our political capital, our skill at organizing, all that good stuff that we do so well, our media platform, which they have a kick-ass media department there. Okay? I mean, we're going to use that stuff, and we are going to bring you up. We are going to help normalize you and make you as much of a considered part of this family as anybody else, so that the next time a New York or a New Hampshire tries to argue, well, we're going to go with the gay people first and we'll come back to those trans people somewhere down the road, maybe in 20 or 30 years, that the Human Rights Campaign has to, must, and I am saying this now, must say, not with us, you don't. Not with our money, not with our support. You don't include trans people. You throw trans people under the bus. You don't get Human Rights Campaign support. You don't get our money. You don't get our people working on your campaigns. You don't get our organizing skills. If you're going to leave some of our community behind, we will not participate. We will speak out against you. Okay, so it's not just, and see, this has been part of a problem with HRC in the past, where they, remember the double track nonsense, where they say, well, we're going to support, we're not supporting a non-inclusive endo, but we're not going to oppose it either. I mean, you remember that kind of bullshit? We believe in a double track approach, which means we're okay with throwing the little guy under the bus. Okay, nobody's buying that shit anymore. And they know it. And they know. And what's more is not only do they know it, but they know that this community is watching and waiting and say, don't you dare. Don't you dare try to play those kind of political games. Because the minute, the split second that something like that occurs, the minute that HRC says, well, okay, They're passing a law that doesn't include trans people, but because it's the Democrat and because they did something that, you know, is good for gay people, we're going to donate money and support them anyway, even though they're doing this. The minute that happens, it's over. It's over. And you know what? I don't think they will. I mean, granted, I'm going out on a limb here by saying this, but I don't believe the HRC will do that. I don't think that that's where they want to go. And I think they understand that we are going to, you know, as Chad Griffin himself said, hold us accountable. That's part of what holding the HRC accountable is about. It doesn't just mean you support what we want. It also means that when somebody tries to throw us under the bus to facilitate rights for gays and lesbians, like they're trying to do, for example, in Michigan right now, have you heard about this? Unfortunately, I don't have the details. I've been trying to get more details. But I did hear from Allison Van Kuyken yesterday that they are currently in a process where it looks like they may throw the trans community under the bus in order to pass a civil rights law for gays and lesbians. Now, it should be pointed out that Michigan is a Republican-controlled legislature. So just the fact that they got the gays even being considered is a big deal. But you know what? I'm sorry. Here is a test for HRC right here. If HRC supports the effort to advance a gay-only bill, unacceptable. Unacceptable. It's all or nothing. And if HRC, and I'm saying this, I'm saying it right here, right now, if HRC supports politicians who are okay with throwing trans people under the bus in order to pass a gay rights law that doesn't protect us, unacceptable. And they will be held accountable for it. Personally, at this point, given what I know now, I don't expect them to do that. I think they've learned. I think they're smarter than that. I don't think they're going to do it. I really don't. And I'm glad, because I'm becoming, I won't say confident, because that's too strong a word. I'm becoming more comfortable with the idea that I don't expect HRC to screw us over. I really don't. I don't. I think they are highly motivated to do right by us, because I think they finally come to understand that doing right by trans people is doing right by their own organization's continued survival and future prospects of coalition building. That you don't get to throw trans people under the bus and still call yourself a leadership organization. That's just not how it works. It's just not. And it took a lot of time to, for that message to sink in. And I think when they got kicked in the ass immediately with that Karen Quimby thing, with the flag thing, I think that was a wake-up call for them. They say, no. You don't get to do it now because guess what? You know what? We're still paying attention. And we're still going to speak out. And we're still going to call you out on stuff like that. Why? Because that's what we do. Because that is the trans community culture that you, HRC, created. Hypervigilant, ready to expect the worst, prepared to act if and when we see that. And I think that's an important thing. You know, I've said this, I remember saying this, God, like 2007 or even earlier. This monster, HRC created that monster themselves. They were responsible. And I think they understand that. They know that. They get it. It took them, all right, it took them a lot of years to get it, but they get it. And so I am content to say, okay, HRC, you got my attention. That's for sure. Now, show me something. Show us something. And I hope they do. I want to see these guys. You know what I want to see, honestly? I want to see these guys collectively say, oh, yeah? Watch this. And then do something that, and I don't even know what that means, okay? I'm not talking in specifics here. I'm just saying, I want them to say to the trans community, oh, yeah? You think we're not for real, huh? Watch this. And go and knock our socks off. Seriously. I don't know how. I don't know what. I'm not getting into specifics. Do something to knock our socks off. Make people like me and Monica Roberts and Katrina Rose and all these folks go, whoa, I didn't expect that. Huh, pretty cool. I mean, that's what I want to see. And you know these people can do it. This is the HRC. This is the Human Rights Campaign, the largest, most influential, and wealthiest LGBT civil rights organization in the country. Their media platform is unmatched. Their activist ability and reach and their political capital and reach is unmatched in this community. They have the tools. That's what I want to see. I want to see these guys knock my socks off. Do something so... And I leave it up to them to decide what that might be and what shape that might take. All I'm saying is, you know what? Impress me. Do it. You've already started to. Now really impress me. Make me say, whoa. Seriously. And you know what? I believe they will. I believe they will. I mean, the more I see, the more I like. And it's taken me a long time to admit that because I, like most of you, I have been predisposed to assume that whatever these people are telling me is at best questionable and at worst, an outright falsehood. And yet I'm starting to say, you know what? Well, maybe not. Or more specifically, maybe not anymore. Maybe Chad Griffin, at having him in charge, really does make a difference. Maybe it matters who's the president of the Human Rights Campaign. Maybe it matters that the culture has come as far and evolved as much as it has. And it matters that HRC has not kept up. And it matters that in the trans community, new activists, young activists who are coming into the movement are coming in being taught that you don't trust the human rights campaign. They want to change that narrative, understandably. But they also know that, people like me are not going to help them change that narrative unless we feel like we've got a reason to. I mean, if they're doing the right thing, I am more than happy to use my keyboard and this microphone to say, hey, good job, kudos. I'm more than happy to do that. As you know, if you listen to the show, I do it all the time when I see them doing something I like. But just like when I was calling them out every 5 minutes on the Bolerico Project and on the Huffington Post, and they weren't too happy with me about that, and I used to say all the time, well, if you want me to stop calling you out, if you want me to stop, you know, shredding you on the radio and shredding you in op-eds on the Bolerico Project, stop giving me all this great material. Stop giving me things to write about and talk about on the show. Well, you know what? They did. Surprise! I haven't had a major complaint about the human rights campaign in well over a year. And that impresses me. But what impresses me more, again, just not having a complaint is not enough. Oh, well, okay, they're not doing any damage, so that's a good thing. You know, I mean, that's nice, but it doesn't tell me anything. What impresses me is, like I said, when I see them doing stuff. Yeah, we don't like that you don't have enough trans people, so they're hiring trans people. We don't like that you don't do enough for trans people in terms of policy and programs and things. So they're rolling out all these new programs, which we talked about on the show last week, some of which Chad Griffin mentioned in his speech, stuff I'm quite sure we're going to be hearing a lot more about as time goes on. I will tell you that we are planning future shows with HRC folks. I can't go into detail yet because stuff has not been confirmed, but I will tell you there will be future shows. We will keep tracking what HRC is doing, who's doing it. We're going to keep track of this. We're going to follow this story. We are going to stay on this story. This is not the last you will hear. It's not like I'm going to blah, blah, blah about this for a week, and then all of a sudden I'm not going to talk about it anymore. No, no, no. This is a big deal. We're going to keep on this story. Now, we've had a saturation level over the last week because, well, Chad made his speech, and so there's been a lot of coverage, and, well, a lot of the coverage has been me. But, you know, we're not ending it, okay? In other words, this is not going to fade away because, to me, in my opinion, this is not by any means the end. If anything, this is the beginning. This is where we start, okay? To me, Chad just waved the starting flag or shot the starting gun or whatever, said go, whatever you want to call it. Now we get to see, because now all the stuff that they were very quietly doing in the background for the last year or so, well, they pulled back the curtains and said, hey, check this out. Look at this guy who we just made deputy chief of staff, Hayden Mora. Isn't that cool? Look at Allison Van Kuyken, look at Lou Weaver, look at all these new folks. You know, now they're ready to say, hey, check out all this stuff. And they did that in the person of Chad Griffin, who is another one. Hey, look at our new president who's not an asshole. Sorry, but you know what? I make no apologies for calling Joe Salmanis an asshole, because he is an asshole. And I'm sorry if that offends some people, but you know what? I'm sorry. But a guy like that, a guy who's willing, as Donna just told us, a guy who is willing to encourage board members successfully to throw trans people under the bus because, oh, well, we might upset some members of Congress because, you know, we don't want them to actually feel like obligated to act like leaders or anything. You know, because this isn't about getting our rights. This is about making it easy for our friends on Capitol Hill. I mean, seriously, I don't see how that argument flies. But yet that is precisely the argument, apparently, according to Donna, that Joe Solomonis was making. Oh, we might upset our friends on Capitol Hill. Well, you know what? I don't really give a shit whether you upset your friends on Capitol Hill. Because if they are willing to throw trans people under the bus in order to score political points by passing a bill that doesn't include us, they are not our friends. And if you are really a trans-supportive and inclusive organization, then they are not your friends either. Solomonis obviously didn't feel that way because he clearly advocated and operated as president of the Human Rights Campaign as if his main mission was to gain rights and benefits and privileges for gays and lesbians. Period. Dead stop. We were an afterthought. And that's all we were. Yeah, it would be nice if we could protect the trans folks, but that's not really what we care about. That's really not what's that important. We won't withdraw our support. We won't speak out against our buddies in Capitol Hill. Well, unless you start, you know, doing things that impact, you know, the real constituency of the Human Rights Campaign. And you know what? That may have been credible to a certain number in 2007. But that shit don't fly in 2014, my friends. I know it. You know it. And guess what? HRC knows it too. Because you have to remember where we were in 2007. And those of you who are younger and may not have been a part of the community, you may not understand. But back in those days, we were nowhere near as accepted politically as we are today. We were nowhere near as accepted culturally as we are today. There was no Janet Mock. There was no Laverne Cox. There was no analogs to those folks. There wasn't even a Becky Juro and a Parker Malloy at that point. I mean, we were still right. Well, I don't know about Parker. I think she was still probably in high school or something. But we were writing for the blog. I was writing for blogs. Okay, and I had in fact in 2007 actually I had a column for a local newspaper, a local gay newspaper called the Rehoboth Beach Gazette. Okay, but that was as far as we could go. We were very, very limited. Most people didn't know who we were. Most people didn't give a shit. And so HRC, like most of the culture at the time, didn't really give a shit either. And frankly, Barney Frank, I don't think he ever really gave a fuck about us. I really don't. I don't think Barney Frank gives a shit whether trans people live or die. I think what Barney Frank really cares about is passing rights for gays and lesbians only. And the only reason that he even feigns trans inclusiveness is because that's what is politically popular. I really do. I don't see, you know, I mean, and I think we have to separate. I think it's important that we separate. Okay, a guy like Barney Frank and a guy like Joe Solomonis from the entirety of the Human Rights Campaign or the entirety of Congress or the entirety of everything. We can't take these guys and say, well, they were assholes, so therefore everybody who works with them is an asshole. Because that's not true, and we know that the world doesn't work that way, and we know that politics doesn't work that way. And we know that culture, our culture, doesn't work that way. But now that the culture has caught up, now that we are the hot story, we are the headline, now, I don't think that's a coincidence. Again, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think the folks at HRC said, it's time. We have to do this. If we want to remain relevant, we must do this. We don't have another choice. It is time. The world has evolved. The country has evolved. The community has evolved. The movement has evolved. And so the human rights campaign must evolve as well, or be left behind. And I think that's what it is. I do. Okay, so again, yes, I think they're wonderful for coming to this. I think it is wonderful that they've come to this understanding, that they're working on it, that they're seeking out to be more seeking to become more trans inclusive and supportive. And I think that's partially because they've come to the understanding that this is the right thing to do morally and all that good stuff. But I also think it's about their own survival and their own maintaining their own relevance in this community. And that if they want to remain a leadership organization in this movement, in this modern LGBT civil rights movement, if they want to remain a credible organization and a credible voice, not only in Congress, but in this community as a whole, this was a must for them. They had to catch up to where the rest of the community already is and has been for some time. Okay, because when you think, what was going on a year ago with Karen Quimby, look at the reaction. The reaction was so swift. It's like, see, HRC is at it again. See, knew those fuckers had never changed. And you know what? Rightly so. They deserved every word of it. Absolutely. I mean, I wrote an article for the Huffington Post, and I shredded them in it because they deserved to be shredded in that article because they fucked up, and they fucked up badly, and they needed to be called out on it. And I think they realized, it's like, no. Yeah, 2007 is over, but people have long memories. We do not forget, and we certainly don't forget. As we watch state after state hand marriage rights to gay couples while trans people are being left behind. And certain organizations, not necessarily HRC, because HRC is a national organization. I'm talking in large part about the statewide organizations. And these organizations just remain silent. Oh, sure. Well, we're going to just not talk about gender for a couple of years while we get this marriage bill passed. Oh, and then we'll come back for you. You know, good old Empire State Pride agenda, that bullshit. And then they come back. Yeah, well, now we've loosed up all our political capital fighting for marriage, so we can't do anything now. We're sorry. Yeah, nobody's paying attention to us anymore because, there's no more money and nobody's interested because, we got ours now, so sorry. Maybe we'll issue a press release or something. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, look at New Hampshire. Look at New Hampshire. Same kind of thing. They were suggesting passing a constitutional amendment. Nobody gave a shit. Nobody talked about trans people when they passed their marriage law. And here we are. Do you hear about any activity, about any activist things going on in New Hampshire around protecting trans people? I sure as hell haven't. Gee, I wonder where this might be an organization with lots of money and manpower and the skills to advocate at the state level that might be able to do something about that. Is there maybe an organization, say, I don't know, Washington or somewhere, where we might be able to address that issue? That's what I want to see. I mean, really, that's what I most want to see. I want to see HRC go into these areas, okay, because let's be honest. We know that on the national scene, Congress is going nowhere. It's an election year. Boehner is in the Speaker's office. Forget it. Just don't even go there. Don't even go there right now. It's not worth it. But you know what? How about New York? How about New Hampshire? How about New York City with the trans birth certificates where they've been jerking us around for 12 years, just not doing it. How about HRC goes into New York City and says, we're going to fight and win to get these regulations changed? Because this is something that does not require an election. This requires a change in city policy. HRC could definitely have an impact on that. Okay, and I don't just bring that up because I happen to be a person born in Brooklyn. I have not been able to change my birth certificate. I could change the name on it, but I can't change my gender without providing reams of personal surgical information that say that I've had surgery. I mean, it's draconian. It's unbelievably draconian. And they just don't do it. It's not that they don't believe in it. Okay, technically, they've been in violation of their own city law for 12 years. And nobody is doing a goddamn thing about it. Well, you know what? I think this would be a perfect place for HRC to step in and start running some commercials, start planning some events, start leveraging some of those political connections. Hey, Mayor de Blasio, want to speak at our next gala? Yeah, we need a favor first. No, seriously. Seriously. Show us. Don't just tell us. Show us. Seriously. Go into New Hampshire and make it happen. Go into New York State and make it happen. Be the big dog that you are. Change the conversation. You did it for gay marriage. You did it for don't ask, don't tell. You did it for a non-inclusive ENDA back when. Now, do it for us. Get us a win. That's what we want to see. Get us a win. Get us a bunch of wins. And even if you can't get those wins right away, show us you're working on it. Show us where you are. Show us what you're doing. Show us how we can participate. Don't just say, we're HRC, we're coming in and we're taking over. We're going to say, who's working on this and how do we support this effort? What do you need? You need money? Okay. You need some manpower? You got it. You want some media attention? Yeah, we can help with that too. That's what I want to see. Show us. Start changing the conversation to say, this is not acceptable behavior anymore. And we, with our money, with our manpower, with our political influence, will not allow it. We not only will not participate if you behave like that, we will speak out against you. We will cause you problems. We will work against, not just won't support, but we will work against non-inclusive initiatives. If it doesn't include our entire community, we not only will not support it, we will speak out against it, and we will not endorse candidates or fund candidates or support candidates or politicians who participate in it. And it doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or whatever. If you don't support the entire community, if you advocate legislation that divides our LGBT family, we will stand against you. That's the key point. That is what we need to see from HRC. Not just saying we won't support non-inclusive legislation, but also saying we will stand against it. That if you do this, if you go a route that lets our trans brothers and sisters out of the loop, that leaves part of our community behind, not only won't we support you, we will fight you. That's what I want to see. And I will tell you something else. That, I think, more than any other single thing that HRC can do, would help win over hearts and minds. Don't just tell us, Chad, HRC, don't just tell us. Show us. Use that leverage. Use that political capital. Use all that media juice that you have. Show this community what an HRC that's on the trans community side really looks like. Because I tell you, I believe this. If you really want to win hearts and minds, that's how to do it. Not just saying we'll fight for you, but actually doing it. And doing it strategically. Not just making a show of saying, here we are, here's a check. You know, not, that's important. Those things are crucially important. But saying, you know what? Mr. Congressman so-and-so, or actually, roll that back. It's more like representative, state representative so-and-so. Yeah, we supported you in your last election, and we gave you money, and we ran ads for you, and we helped people get you elected because, you know, you helped us with gay marriage or whatever. You want us to support you again? This is what we demand. We demand, and we will not support you if you do not. See, that's what it has to be. I believe there has to be a flip side in order for it to be credible support. You can't say, well, we want you to do this, and, you know, we'll be very upset if you don't do it, but we'll still give you money or we'll still give you support anyway. That's not credible. Because then what that says to the politicians is, well, there's no downside for you in opposing trans rights because you're going to get the same check from us you would anyway. So why put yourself out on a limb politically? There's no incentive. You have to be able to use and be willing to use the carrot and the stick. Stick is important. Because you have to, because how can you say that you are a supporter, that you consider the trans community an integral part of your mission and your agenda, unless you are willing to say, we will not settle for less. It is not okay. We will not reward you with support from our organization, if you're going to go out and support legislation that leaves part of our community behind. And we're not going to support you and fund you if you're not willing to stand up for legislation that we ask you to that supports this community, even if it's only about trans folks. So if we come and HRC says, we need you to fight in, let's say, New York for this, and that legislator decides, well, I'm not going to vote for this, but, you know, you're still going to give me a check. The answer has to be no. Sorry, Governor Cuomo, you didn't support the trans rights bill. You let it go down in flames. No money for you. That's what it has to be. It has to be. Because unless you're willing to use the stick, the carrot becomes optional. For a guy like Cuomo, who's way out in front, who's probably going to cakewalk to his next term in office, where's the incentive? If you say to a guy like that, well, doesn't matter if you support the trans rights bill or not, we're going to support you anyway. We're going to give you money anyway. We're going to put boots on the ground for you anyway. Well, where's the incentive? It's not credible activism. So that's what I need to see from the Human Rights Campaign. Not just all the stuff, not just the hires, not just the programs that they've announced. But when push comes to shove, when the rubber meets the road in the political arena, when it's time for there to be a decision made, do we go with a fully inclusive bill, or do we make life easier for ourselves by kicking these people to the curb? HRC, if they are to be credible to this community as an advocate, has to be willing to say no. We will not support anything less than full inclusion. That's what they've said. But it has to be not only the legislation, but those legislators who vote for it as well. You vote for non-inclusive legislation, you are not on our side. That's what it has to be. You don't vote for a fully inclusive bill, you don't get the support of the Human Rights Campaign. That's what it has to be. It has to be that. No excuses. No half measures. No double track nonsense. None of that shit. All the way. Four letters. No exceptions. LGBT. Four letters. Always. Four letters. This is what it has to be this way. It has to be. Because otherwise, you know this. I mean, you guys, those of you who have been around long enough, you know what's going on here. You give a politician a back door that's easier than, a way to escape an obligation without putting themselves out politically. You give a politician an excuse like that, a back door like that, and they're going to take it. Of course they're going to take it. The thing. If you're going to give a politician a back door like that, well, then that's not credible advocacy. Four letters, no exceptions, HRC. That's what we need from you now. All right, we are done. It is, we're out of time. What can I say? Jeez, where does it go? Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. Podcast will be up in case you missed anything. It'll be up just a few minutes from now. And we will catch you next week. I believe I will be going to Washington. I'm pretty sure I'll be back in time to do the show, although I'm not certain. But plan on a show unless you hear otherwise. And we'll catch you next time. Have a good night, everybody.